Ready camera one, ready camera two, and action. Hey, listeners, and a special hey, hi, hello, bonjour. I was about to say au revoir, but that's not hello. A special hey, hola to everyone listening, especially y'all from the Patreon. A couple of quick Patreon shout outs. Thank you for joining YC, Ayana, Kristen, LaRose, Erica, Amina, Ariana Jacobs, Kayla, Steph, Christina, Angela Price, and Delicia Young. And as you know, patrons, we do a monthly book giveaway. This month, we will be giving away the comic book that we read, Queen of Bad Dreams by Dani Lore. And that lucky patron is, and drumroll please, Katria Walker. Katria, we have sent you a private message. Not one of those. We have sent you a message asking you for an address to send this book to. And remember, patrons, you could be next. Anybody could be a patron for just $1, $2, or 78 cents a month. Helps the Wallen family. Ben, you have not interrupted me. I was waiting for it, but it never came. But it's not coming because we talk. We are vibing today. So let's get started with the show. Oh, hello. If you're watching the YouTube, Ben just sat extra close to me. Mm-mm. Welcome to the Sci-Fi Sci under the Believe Podcast Network. It is indeed a podcast about Black science fiction, Black fantasy, and staying on the same page as a family. Me, Wiggles, Ben, and Gucci. Today for episode 88, we'll be discussing the collection of short stories, The Memory Librarian, written by Janelle Monáe, but co-authored by Eve L. Ewing, Dani Lore, Alea Don Johnson, sorry Alea, Johanka Delgado, and Sheree Renee Thomas. But before we jump into that, how are you doing, my love?
It was great. It was great. I'm great.
What's it?
Everything.
It was great. It was great.
It was great. I'm so happy. The world is so great. There's nothing wrong. Anything. Nothing.
Nothing's bad. Wrong in the world.
Nothing's wrong in the world. I'm very excited. I've been thinking a lot about filicide and how you're more likely to be killed within the first year of your life than any other time of your life. But other than that, I was just reflecting on that. And also, there's something called nanocytide. It's like being killed within the first 24 hours of your life. So I've just been studying why mothers kill their children. But it's been pretty good.
Why do you kill the mood with things like that, knowing that we have a 6-week old in the other room?
Oh no!
Not alone, by the way. Not alone.
No. Yeah, she's just hanging out, drinking tea with the dog. What else did I do? Oh, I caught myself watching videos of dogs with babies. That really brought up my mood.
Yeah, I got a lot of newborns in my current page. Wiggles is doing great, everybody. She's looking more alert. She's thriving. We're obsessed with her.
But yeah, why was I researching?
Yeah,
filicide?
Because you like to give me anxiety.
No, not at all. I think, all right, so my mom has been here for the past month, and she's leaving very, very soon.
And like literal
I've just been reflecting on the amount of support that we've had and why, how much of a struggle it is to raise a child, and that if you don't have any support, someone who would usually not be violent may be violent towards an infant, and there are actually infanticide laws that lessen the punishment in a lot of states for mothers who kill babies, just because it's more common. Because you're not thinking in your right mind, and if you don't have support, I don't know.
That's a real thing.
Yeah,
and I do not want to overlook the insane amount of support we've had. Like my mom was here.
It's
on
ridiculous.
The back half of my pregnancy, and then your mom has been here for the first few weeks of Wiggles' life. So we are very, very grateful to have this support, because I'm about to be calling all my friends as soon as your mama leaves.
Larger,
I need some help.
Larger society, like government, doesn't support new mothers, and so
yeah, Agreed.
Yeah, so if you don't have that family structure, it's super difficult. Like yesterday, we went out.
Be a mom, bitch.
Yeah, be a mom. We're actually, now we're going to force you to be a mother, but we won't give you any resources to take care of your child. Well, yesterday we took a yoga class together, and it was just so wonderful. And I like held your hand in it, and you didn't swipe my hand away. Usually, no, you never swipe my hand away.
I love how confident you are in a yoga class. And well, let me say this for those of you who don't know. We went to a yoga class that requires you to use weights. Well, not requires, but recommends you use weights. And it's a really sweaty workout. It's a hot yoga class. So it is pretty rigorous. And Ben was the only man in class. And he only does about 30 to 40% of the class. The rest of the time, he's just breathing and mostly sitting. And he doesn't really use his weights a lot. So I really admire, you know, most men try to get in there and overdo it, even if it's their first time. Like, I remember taking my brother to the first yoga class. He's like, I got this. I got this. He's like a gym rat, and he really struggled, but was still trying to do everything and obviously was very sore the next day. But you're not like that at all. You're like, nope, I will sit here and drink my coffee while you bitches lift weights, and I'm confident, you know? I like that about you.
I think I did more than 40% of the class.
Like, I gave you lighter weights, you know? Because I knew that you're like weak and you still couldn't do those. And it was really inspiring to see someone just live in their truth and put the weights down. It was great. Not, and you shouldn't be competing with anybody else in the room.
How have you been doing? Do you feel supported?
I feel very supported. I'm doing this really cool thing in my life where I'm just pumping milk every 2 to 3 hours, and it's super fun. So I can't really do anything that would require my attention longer than an hour. But it's actually really nice getting back into Hell's Kitchen.
Well, lots really of, you've been watching lots of TV.
I have been. Yeah. Because you have to just sit there and pump and hand massage and everything like
That's
that.
Frustrating.
So, which is fine because we've been binging Stranger Things and the like. But I loved getting back into Hell's Kitchen. I was watching it with Wiggles yesterday, and I was like doing this thing where I was sort of mis-explaining the show. So I was like, well, Wiggles, it's the show where the Bloods and the Crips get together in the kitchen. Because it's like,
oh, they do
the
wear
red team
and, blue.
And the blue team with these bandanas. And it was just fun to like, I was like, this is essentially what this is. These are two gangs that are cooking for their lives and getting yelled at by this super gang member that has like 14 Michelin stars. So I love it. And I sat there and ate ramen noodles while watching people make, you know, like really fine, well, you know, lamb. I love it. There's some other cool risotto with truffle. But yeah, Ben is really hyper-focused on this outline because obviously he wants to spend time with his mom. So we'll get right into why people love this show.
Right. So please rate us on our podcast reviews. Go to Apple Podcasts. Give us 5 stars. Write really nice things about us. It's super helpful for people discovering our show. And so here's something that Cookie Caper wrote.
Cookie
wrote, love this show. 5 stars. Love the Wallen family. And I love Amber and Ben's dynamic smiley face. I know. Our dynamic is the best. I was thinking, like, our dynamic is me being witty and walking off Amber, walking her off an edge all the time, always showing her the bright side of life. And
what,
like,
is walking
sort of
her off an edge?
Like, you're just you're like a highly anxious comedian.
Okay.
And so our dynamic is like, I'm the stable one. I provide the wit and I provide the comfort that you need to be funny. And so I think people really appreciate that dynamic that we have going. What do you think our dynamic? I mean, I thought I sort of hit the nail on the head. Two heads.
Okay. I think our dynamic is a blend of a lot of different things. So you explained it, like the straight man versus like the drama queen in comedy. But I also think I people appreciate just like I have sort of like a masculine energy.
Yeah.
You know, just very like demanding and sexy, deep voiced. So I think people can appreciate like, oh my gosh, I'm a strong woman like that person. Like, you don't have to just be like effeminate all the time. I mean, I do, you know, cry a lot or whatever, but I think there are levels of, there are like some gender play
when it comes to our dynamic.
Yeah.
Which makes sense, because growing up, I really loved, like, very more effeminate men. Not effeminate, but just, like, fluid men.
Yeah.
Like, I was really into, like, the Tyler, the Creators, the Andre 3000s, mm-hmm. Prince. So, it makes sense that I ended up with a white nerd.
I think that comparing me to Prince is totally appropriate.
I think everybody, anybody listening to the show is just like, now, bitch, you reaching. But you know what else is really interesting? I just noticed in the camera that we're both wearing Star Wars shirts.
Yeah.
You're wearing a Obi-Wan Kenobi shirt, and I'm wearing the Mona Leia. And if you would have told me 10 years ago that I would be wearing Star Wars t-shirts and not, you know, jumpsuits to brunch, I literally would have been like, what? I've never seen Star Wars. Like, in what world would mm-hmm. I be wearing Star Wars merch? It's just like, my, have the tables have turned. Just interesting to know. So you've had a big effect on me. I mean, in this podcast in general. So I think that's a part of our dynamic too. You're very cunning.
Speaking on big effects, you are trying to teach me how to dance. And
how is that speaking of big effects?
Well, you've had a big effect on me. Like, you know, I would have never really taken the effort to, like, try to learn how to dance, ever. Like, dancing, like, moving in my body. Like, my mom was describing that. My mom likes to dance, and she was describing, like, trying to teach my dad. And my dad was like, this is weird. I don't know. I guess men are not. Maybe men are not taught to be as comfortable in their, like, fluid body movements in the same way that women are.
Because all middle school is like, you gay.
Not so much anymore.
Really?
Yeah, that's sort of been...
You're in middle, like, school territory sometimes. That, well, as a teacher, sorry. I didn't want to...
No.
If you're listening to this show, it's like, B, you hang out in middle schools, right?
That could mean many different things.
Horrible thing. That's what I wanted to clarify.
Yes, I hang out in middle... All different kinds of middle schools. No. But actually, kids are pretty good at policing each other now. It's sort of like, that's homophobic. Like, you can't use the term gay in that derogatory way. Like, oh yeah, they're on it.
What about race relations as well? Not that those are mutually exclusive at all, but I'm glad that we're reaching a front with homophobia, and kids are, like, not tolerant of that.
It's interesting, right? Because
So no, that's a no.
We're not there yet. I also teach mostly first and second generation African immigrants.
Okay.
Like the black students from my school, compared to, like, black students. So black students on the north side tend to be, like, first, second generation in Chicago, first, second generation immigrants, Ghana, mm-hmm. Nigeria. Black students on the south side of Chicago tend to be
blackish. Yeah.
From the
mixed with black and black, right?
The Great Migration,
right?
Yeah.
Southern blacks.
So there's this interesting. I haven't really thought a whole lot about this. But I think
we all saw Black Panther. There's some tensions there.
There's some tensions between
African-American students.
No. Here's the interesting thing is that the African students are trying to be like black students. And I think their parents are trying to, like, pull them away from that.
Because they don't want them to be like shiftless, pop culture, lazy African-Americans.
Well, not only that, but I think pop culture right now is like black culture, right? And it always has been, but I think it's now being explicitly provided. Like, there was a documentary released recently about country music that's all mm-hmm. about... Have you heard about this documentary?
No, I have not.
I'll have to look it up, but it's about black country music. And so there's this recognition that American culture is black culture.
Right.
Okay.
Or black culture is American.
And so there's this tension of, like, where African-American kids are trying to sort of ingrain themselves with black culture. And there's that pulling away that their parents know, like, stay Ghanaian, stay Nigerian.
Yeah.
It's fascinating. And I think those kids are going to be the writers, the researchers of this movement. And they're going to try to figure that out. So I'll let them do that. I'm just observing things that I notice. So,
yeah. Well, so you were talking about your horrible dancing. Go ahead.
Oh, my terrible dancing. Oh, yeah. So you're trying to teach me how to dance. And so you posted a video of me how to dance. And a lot of people had some...
What dance specifically were you trying to learn?
The electric slide.
A staple of cookout and wedding season.
Angela Holland said that, "I've never seen someone kick that high doing the electric slide." And then Yesenia said, "Looking amazing, Amber. Ben should just do the batty bounce." I didn't know what the batty bounce is.
I have to be honest. I don't know what the batty bounce is either. It's just
I think Yesenia was trying to just make sure I wasn't like doing anything.
Maybe. I'm just truly not familiar. That might be a new line dance for me. I'm familiar with electric slide, Cupid shuffle, cha-cha slide, what is it called? The biker shuffle, stuff like that, but I don't know the batty bounce.
Oh yeah, I should probably explain what the Patreon's got a point is. So basically, we post questions or videos on the Patreon, and then our patrons provide feedback or answer the question. We discuss what they say.
Yeah, you zooming. That's all right. You anxious.
Susie said respectfully, "Ben, this was embarrassing."
She said more than that. Don't make her.
But luckily for you, there's this thing called practice. Mm. Dang, Susie. If we don't see an improved version of your electric slide that involves you actually taking those steps, and you mustn't touch the dance floor with a fingernail at this wedding.
Ouch.
Damn, Susie went in. It's a two-step. You have to actually move, Ben. And then I'm dying. And then she said, keep teaching, Amber. I believe in you both.
How does that feel, baby?
I don't think Susie believes in me, though. Damn, Susie.
That's hilarious.
I love reading comments. It's like my favorite thing.
We know.
They're so funny.
I mean, I think since the baby has come, people have been a lot kinder out there in these streets. But, there's always somebody that's like, "Fuck your baby. I hate y'all. I follow y'all on everything, but I hate y'all." It's like, that's okay. You can hate watch, baby.
Or they'll enjoy everything we do besides one video. And then maybe a video... we make a joke that goes too far, or maybe it's not appropriate.
I think that's fair. I think there's no world where you should enjoy every single thing we put out.
I would say 50% of the things that you put out, I dislike,
That would be correct. And you do not hold back in telling me that. At what point are you just going to be my cheerleader? Pick a day.
I will
any
never.
Day.
I can't just be your cheerleader. I can't just be your yes man. I don't believe in that. I love you too much.
Yes, but if you could just love me a little less, I need the confidence sometimes.
I think you want the fake love a little bit more.
What's wrong with fake love?
It's not lasting. It doesn't help you grow.
Sometimes real love don't be lasting either.
That is also true.
So what would be fake love?
Fake
love. What would be you showing me fake love?
Fake love is like, "Oh, that video you made was really funny," or "That what you're wearing is really great," when it's obviously not. Or like, "That food you made was really good." Like, my mom made it. My mom is an incredible cook. She's been making incredible things. Mm-hmm. And she made one thing that was just terrible. And Amber and I could have both said it was good, but we just were upfront and honest. And
she knew it was bad. I was like, "Judy, nah, I love you now."
Right, exactly.
But this ain't good.
So you led and with, "I love you now."
That it was what? What was it, Ben?
It was mac and cheese.
It was macaroni and cheese. So it's just a curse. your family, your side of the family is cursed. Oh. That shit was bad. I knew something was up when I saw her cutting them onions. And I was like, now I'm not a smart man. But I know mac and cheese don't be having all them damn onions in it. And that's okay.
She put a foot... of breadcrumbs, like a layer of breadcrumbs. It was like breadcrumb layer and then
but
your
you
mac
did
and
that.
Cheese.
But you do that too.
I pepper it with paprika breadcrumbs. It's like
the
a panko, peppering.
Panko.
Panko. I can't even. Panko.
I pepper it with paprika breadcrumbs. Because Peter Piper picked a pack of pickled peppers. They're all bad. All right, man. What did we read? Because let's get into it. Let's be honest.
So we read The Memory Librarian, and the premise of it is, in a world where the oppressive new dawn government erases and collects the memories of dirty computers, aka humans that are too creative or too queer. In this world, rebellions have begun to pop up. And each of these stories is about different groups of people rebelling against the New Dawn, this oppressive, anti-queer, anti-creative group. And that premise is pretty great, and it's also building off of Janelle Monáe's Dirty Computer album. And
which we watched in its entirety.
We also watched Metropolis, which is what Janelle Monáe is taking a lot from. We also watched Blade Runner, which she's also taking a lot from. So we did our research here. You don't have to watch any of those things to enjoy the book. But there was...
Stop trading lightly.
There wasn't...
What are you actually trying to say,
a man? Lot to enjoy. And I wanted this book to be so good.
Too. You know what it was like? It was like watching your sibling go to rehearsals, go to, you know, advertising the show on social media, and then you go to the show and you're like, that's bad. And it doesn't mean that your cousin isn't talented or your sibling or whatever, but Ben's been to a show of mine that's been horrible.
I saw it like 3 times.
You saw a horrible show of mine 3 times?
The same one.
The same horrible show. It didn't get better. But that doesn't mean I'm not funny. Doesn't mean I'm not talented.
I did laugh.
The show was bad.
I did laugh a lot. There were some really, really funny moments. And in this book, there is a short story in this book that is amazing. It's incredible. Yeah. And so we'll talk about that. But let's just like go through each one and we'll discuss it. And we'll try to be as positive as possible.
Why are you holding back?
Because...
Be honest. Why because, are you holding back?
The people who worked...
Dud, like, that's just well, is reality.
Because the people... Yeah. Yeah. But the people who worked on this book are people that we like and we've had connections with through
Correct.
Social media. And so... And people I will probably meet in person, so...
But you know what you're doing? You're showing them fake love.
That is... Fair enough. All right.
Are you not...
Well, okay, so the big problems with this book is that there was not enough exposition. Like, this book has been compared... Exposition means explanation of the world, right? Like, you learn about this nebulous government organization called New Dawn.
Yeah.
But you're not really sure, like, the inner workings of New Dawn.
Not
you know
all.
That the first story is called The Memory Librarian, and, like, the librarians.
Well, there's an introduction to that made zero sense.
Yeah.
I was trying to breastfeed Wiggles and read it, and I was like, Ben, this makes no sense. I reread it 3 times. I don't understand what they're talking about. And Ben was reading ahead of me because we were sharing the same text. So he was like, just move ahead. And then I'd still be like, if the intro doesn't make sense, like, I am not confident in what's coming.
Okay. To that point, so this is labeled as cyberpunk and Afrofuturism. Cyberpunk is known for technobabble, and it's also like a personal thing. Like, a lot of people, a lot of science fiction lovers don't like cyberpunk because you're thrown with all these new words. And there are some things like wordplay here where librarians and authors, terms that me and you sort of associate as like the greatest people on earth, those people in this world who work for New Dawn are evil. Like, librarians take people's memories and erase them. And so the first story is about a memory librarian, Seshet, who like holds people's memories who need their memories erased. And authors come in and like author new memories, essentially. And so I think that idea was interesting, but there was so much. Like, I didn't really understand Seshet beyond the fact that she was a memory librarian. And there was a woman, Alethea, there's a big twist sort of near the end of the book of who Alethea is, but it didn't really mean anything.
It didn't hit because
we didn't know who Alethea
wasn't developed.
Yeah.
Or it would just be random. I think directionless is the best way to describe the first big story for me, The Memory Librarian. And at one point it was like, Alethea is a trans woman. We were like, great.
That was really the only thing I could say.
Yeah, it's
about
like,
her.
What are the implications of that? Like, how is that going to, what experiences are going to be present based on that information that you just gave us. And it's like nothing. It's you know, what Niecy Shaw said about the Bridgerton thing. It's like, if you're just going to airbrush and paint, you know, white people black and not have any part of a black experience in here, you kind of just wasted that. So it's like, and guess what? Alethea is a trans woman. Check. It's like, okay, so are we going to see some scenes or some flashbacks, or maybe the memory here is really at play, because like maybe who she was in a former life, that's erased now or not. We didn't get any of that. It was just like, it's trans, wink. We did our job by including diversity. And it's like, no, you didn't.
Yeah. And so that's where exposition would come in, where you explain a little bit of how New Dawn has dealt specifically with trans people.
Right.
And so Ted Chiang is brilliant at exposition. I only bring up Ted Chiang because...
Who's Ted?
Ted Chiang is a really well-known science fiction author.
Great.
Who writes extensively, just does explanation. I had you read that story about the technology where you can call back memories. Remember that one? And like the introduction of new technology. And so I think this could have used more like solid world building. Like, here's the world, here's what it looks like. Instead, there was a lot of nebulous language and language that was used that seemed like the authors really knew what they were doing and not anybody else.
Or for the longest time, I was like, Ben, what is a dirty computer? Like, I watched the visual album and they're referencing dirty computers a lot in here, but I'm still not understanding that dirty computers, like, until you just broke it down right here, that they're humans that are too creative and too queer. I didn't really pick that up in the story that much, especially in a world where there were like tons of droids.
It's mentioned super briefly.
It's like, well, these people are memory hoarders and dirty computers. It's like, what does that mean? Did they break the law? Are they pariahs? Are they heroes? Are they villains? I don't know what this means in the context of the story. So yeah, you said the exposition needed some work.
Yeah. If you were reading like super, super closely and like trying to underline, you know, every little thing, you might be able to pick up on it. I guess there is an interesting question in the first story that I wanted to talk to you about, which is essentially Sechet. There's like some convoluted plot idea, but Sechet is...
contrived.
Yes. Yeah, I didn't really understand it. And I don't know, it could be, did we not understand it, or was this just not clear? And the thing is, I read enough science fiction to probably, I'm going to say it just wasn't clear.
It wasn't clear. It wasn't clear. We got to be honest about that. That doesn't mean Janelle Monáe isn't a powerhouse at all. But
this is her first book, too.
Yeah, but... Should be the last. It's just
no,
like,
it shouldn't.
It's just kind of like, stay in your lane. Like, we love you for being like this powerhouse queer icon musician. Like, we don't also need a book. It's kind of like when Beyonce does some acting. It's like, all right, we're gonna go see it, but this is not an Oscar nom.
I completely disagree. I think
the
ideas in here are fantastic. I think the idea of a memory librarian, very similar to someone like a sin eater, like in certain indigenous cultures, someone who like collects sin and eats it and holds on to it. I think the memory librarian idea is awesome, but it just wasn't presented well enough. It does explore this idea.
So what do you disagree with here? Because
someone should stop writing just because their first book is not a hit.
Well, that was a joke, but also, what's wrong with working in your wheelhouse if you're so talented in one area? Like, what's wrong with saying, like, I make really good music that is Afrofuturistic. I don't need to write a book. Like, you're doing enough. Like, another album would have been just as powerful, because that's her best way of, I think, communicating with people.
So if you read the acknowledgments like I did.
Oh, God.
She's a big science fiction fan, right?
Right.
And so science fiction is mostly presented and propagated through the written form. And as a science fiction fan, any science fiction fan who loves this genre is going to try to write a story. And her ideas, the thing, she is a writer, she's written songs, and she wanted to expand that in more clear narrative form. Because Dirty Computer, it's songs. The narrative is a little sticky, and so she is attempting to create more of a narrative form. And she got some of the most, like, the most powerhouse writers and comics, and also in editing. Sheree Renee Thomas is, you know, a supreme editor, has won multiple awards help her write things.
Well, that's why it was also disappointing, because it was like, you knew you couldn't do this alone because it might have been your first one. So you wanted to work with other, like, women of color in the genre who are killing it. So when those stories flopped or didn't make as much sense, I was like, God damn it. Like, y'all co-signed this. This isn't really making sense. Or it felt like, you know, this is what we would call an anthology series, right? Like, they're all still kind of connected.
A short story collection.
A short story collection.
Or like probably more like a short story cycle. Collection could be stories together that don't relate to each other. This is more of a cycle where they cycle through. You know, so for example, librarians are mentioned again. There's a drug called Nevermind that makes you forget. So that keeps on that. And that was also in the Dirty Computer.
Right.
Like Nevermind. So there are certain ideas in here that show up again throughout the right. cycle.
Right. But there's something about it that still felt like all of these were written in their own silos and then, like, put together. And there were buzzwords that were referenced again, mm-hmm. like NDRs and New Dawn and stuff like that, but ultimately it felt disjointed to me. Now, I'm not going to drag all of the stories. I just, for me, The Memory Librarian, which was the first story, was so long, and it felt like so many pages were wasted, and it just felt unintentional in so many ways that it kind of just sucked the air out of the room as you continue to read. Because So by the time you did get to Time Box, which was a really good story, you're like, damn, why didn't you kick us off with this one? Like, why was the first performance of this book, like, such low energy? Like, it, you know, I'll be honest. At one point I was like, Ben, I don't want to read this book. Like, I don't, like, my time is so precious right now between, like, breastfeeding and making amazing content with you, that I was like, I'm going to commit to reading it because we said we would for the podcast. But if I bought this book and wasn't committed, I would put it down.
Yeah.
And this is where I would put it down. And so I'm grateful that you pushed me to, like, be like, go to this next, whatever.
Yeah,
and you're really good about finishing books. I have about a million half finished books because I'm just I'm of the mind that, like, life is too short to just keep powering through a book I'm not enjoying. Like, there are so many incredible books out there that I really enjoy that I want to get to read. So this book for me kind of felt like, if we weren't creating something around this, like, I would not have finished it. I'm just going to be honest.
Okay. Yeah, that sounds like an ending note. All right, well, let's move on to that's the first story. There are five of them.
Damn.
So we spent...
I'm sorry, Ben. Keep going about the other ones.
All right, so the second story is Nevermind. And Nevermind, I'm going to not really talk about the plot, but here are the characters in Nevermind.
I love that it's called Nevermind. You're like, and I'm not talking...
So here are the characters. It's a short story. And there's Near, Jane, Zen, Bat, Rhapsody, Nomi, Pell, Guy, Shay. And there are so many characters without enough characterization that it was difficult for me to determine, like, the difference between the characters at times. Like, I didn't know who was who. Mm-hmm. Anyway, I did like the idea in there here where New Dawn, the government organization, sends these people out called Blush Hounds, and they're able to, like, sniff out people's emotions. And if you feel too much emotion, the Blush Hound sort of, like, loses their mind.
Great concept.
Yeah.
No follow through.
It was sort of used pretty well, but Nevermind asks the essential question, like, to what extent do queer communities accept others? To what level, basically, to what level of queerness do you need to have to be accepted, is a question that Nevermind asks, which is, I think, a super important question. I think they could have done more with it, but
you had to, like, pull that out and extrapolate that. Like,
yeah, not really. I think it's pretty clear. Essentially, there's a blush hound who tries to get into the, called, I think, Bat, trying to get into this queer community called the Pink Hotel, which was cool, but then Rhapsody doesn't want Bat in there, and Near sort of acts as a genderqueer character. Near tries to act as this mediator. It was interesting. There's like this big betrayal twist that I didn't know enough about the villain to really care. It was hard to care. Anyway, to what extent do you accept people into a community? Fencing, they call it psychological fencing, when you fence someone in who might not usually be in your community.
Like gatekeeping.
Nope. Gatekeeping is the idea of where a single individual allows someone to enter into a community. Fencing is when you individually fence someone inside, right?
Like you're so that.
So you're not accepting, you're not pulling them in. You're like, oh, you're not going to change who you are, but I'll fence you in because maybe you're an ally or maybe you're this or that. I think there are two different concepts. Fencing and gatekeeping are separate.
I'm not under-. Give me the example with actual identity.
All right, so like black students might do this with a white teacher. They'll
say, "Oh, you're fine.
You're fine."
But everybody else,
yeah. Fine. So they're not gatekeeping. They're not saying come to the cookout. They're just saying like we're going to talk about black ideas and black, and we're going to talk about this struggle we have with other white teachers because we fenced you in. And so when we say white teachers, we don't mean you. Where gatekeeping might be something along the lines of this story, where we have a queer community and you are genderqueer, and so you go by they, them pronouns, but we don't really want you in this community, or maybe you're a trans person and we don't want you within the woman community.
Gotcha.
So I understand that. That's more of gatekeeping.
Thank you for breaking that down again. I think that fencing can be very dangerous because the person that you fence in can easily get comfortable and forget, you know, like I think to the outside looking in, I have fenced you in, right? Like I'm like, when I'm talking about white people, I don't mean Ben, like, which one day could be very dangerous.
Well, sometimes you are.
I'm what?
When you talk about white people, sometimes
I'm not talking about you.
Sometimes you include me when white people are this way.
Right. Yeah, sometimes I'll be like, why do y'all do that? Remember the other day at the bank, that guy was just talking to me. I was like, Ben, why is he talking to me? Why do y'all do that? He's like, I was like, I'm not trying to say that he wasn't being friendly or something, but there was very something instinctively white about this person and what he was saying to me that was just so unnecessary. And I was like, Ben, get your brother. But I think fencing can be dangerous because I know those teachers that get fenced in and then one day they do something or say something. I'm just like, huh? Like, why do you feel like we're not talking about you? Like, you're a part of the problem too. And they're like, nah, because I call Tyshawn every night. And it's just like, what? No, you're an issue as well. So it can be, there's a level of like, apology that happens there because you're apologizing for feeling that way about white people, but you don't want to offend that person. Right? And you're prioritizing their comfort. Fencing sort of can inherently do that. I don't think it's bad, but it's just kind of like, we're thinking of you first.
Yeah. So
centering you.
It's interesting because this story deals both with gatekeeping and fencing because it's about a queer character coming into a woman-led community. And one of the women in there is not comfortable with this genderqueer person in their community.
For sure.
Right? And sort of we have these conversations even now, right, with TERFs yep. and, you know, trans exclusionary radical feminists, for those who don't know.
And we got one major player of that right now. There's just one, but there's like a figurehead of it, low-key.
Yeah, which is unfortunate. But so sort of that's the conversation we're seeing right now. And I think this story sort of mimics that narrative, what's going on. Where what you're talking about fencing, especially with white teachers. I see this in my experience and what I've read the most of. White teachers will get fenced in by their black students mm-hmm. in associate that fencing or extend that fence into other areas of Black communities where they haven't been fenced in. Right. So for example, like you've been fenced in by the Black students in your classroom, but that doesn't mean that you go to a Black church and Black people at that church will automatically accept you. In fact, they'll probably reject you if you bring up the fact that you teach Black students and you sort of give hints that you've been fenced by other Black people.
Yeah, because that's the danger I'm talking about. It's like the, I can't be this, I have Black friends. It's like, girl, we don't give a fuck. Like, you just did something that was not okay. Like, this is a microaggression. We are addressing this individual single event now, and then you, because some other random person fenced you, or probably didn't even fence you, you probably thought they did, you know?
Yeah.
It's like, remember in Driving Miss Daisy where she's like, you're my best friend, and we're kind of looking at him like, but that's not your best
friend.
I
just love that line in Severance of the Apple TV show where he's like, I'm your best friend, you're my very good friend.
Right, there's a difference.
Yep.
Anyway,
Let's talk about the best story in the collection, yes. Time Box.
Correct.
Time Box essentially is about this couple, Akilah and Raven, and inside their apartment, they discover a room that once you're in this room, it freezes time.
Yes.
And so it becomes about, like, what do you do with that? And one of the big questions that Akilah and Raven have are, like, do we use this room as, like, personal wealth, where we go in there to read a book, or we go in there to finish homework, or do we provide this room for community organizers to come in? And so there's this whole tension between community wealth and personal wealth, which is something that Janelle Monáe would obviously struggle with as, like, a very well-known musician, the face of Target, the face of Pepsi, making lots of money, but also being coming from, like, a lower middle class family in Kansas City, like, you know, and sort of that, I think this had the most potential. And it was just it starts with a really solid idea, which is what science fiction does. It's an idea playground, and it just goes from there. And it's so good. There's, like, a whole line about, like, time being currency. So my question for you is, if you had a room, if we had a room in this house that froze time, what would you do in that room?
Before I answer that question, I want to say that this story definitely felt very Black, because it is the plight of every Black person to be like, well, should I think about myself, or should I think about the community at large? Like, so those are some things, you know, and I just feel like that is not something you take with you daily. Like, when you're doing things, you're like, this is what Ben needs, this is what Ben wants. And sometimes when I'm doing things, I'm like, should I take this deal? Has this corporation been vocal about how they believe in the value of Black lives? Like, let me consider all of these factors. And so I think, as much as I would want to say, I think if we had a room in our house that froze time, as much as I would want to say, I would say, like, let's save that for our family and our whatever. You know, I wouldn't do that. You know, I would be like, let me see if I can send out Google Calendar and organize a schedule where people can come into this room. You know, I would do that. And even though in this story, I felt frustrated when Akilah brought that up, I was like, I would do the same shit. Maybe I wouldn't invite hordes of people into the house, but I would definitely be like, girl, come over here and take a nap. I'll watch your kid. Like, come over here and do this. We can, like, while that time is being for, like, get some time back for yourself. Like, there's no way I just couldn't do that. And there's nothing wrong with that. Like, sometimes these communities, like, they're so separate from me. Like, community is important. Like, even now, raising Wiggles, we've had nothing but help since day one. Community is very valuable, but I think there is a level of, like, sometimes I do overshare for the sake of the community without thinking about our direct family unit. Do you think you would have been Raven wanting it off to yourself, or Akilah sharing it with the collective?
I don't know. It'd be so scary to have that kind of power to freeze time to do what you needed, because I would probably keep it private, because I would know that it would get out and someone, you know, government, you know, someone would find out about it and it would be immediately taken. Like, really powerful resources. And if the resource is too powerful, will be taken from you or be regulated in some way. unless you get too powerful, and then you can sort of manipulate government organizations to sort of do the things that you want to do. And we're seeing this tension right now with Florida and Disney, where Disney traditionally has sort of manipulated Florida governors and Florida politicians to do what they want to do, right? You know, to make sure laws are passed so Disney doesn't have to pay out to workers for, you know, parental leave, or, you know, provide, you know, accommodations for their workers. But now, because Florida and Florida politicians and Disney are sort of falling apart when it comes to the Don't Say Gay bill, Florida governors are responding back with Disney. It's just, it's an interesting question, right? Like, if you or a business has too much power, government officials will try to come and take it. So because of that, I would probably say I would keep it private. I would keep it known to like a select few people. I would not.
Of course.
Yeah, I don't.
This was such a good story. I hate that, because going back to the show analogy, it was like, like going to a bad show and then seeing a powerful number, and you're like, why didn't y'all kick off the show with this? Even though sort of maybe in this universe or whatever, that might not have made sense chronologically, but we needed a wake up at the beginning of the story. And I really appreciate the story, because it made me think a lot about how time is currency. Like you were saying earlier, like, we really don't think about it like that sometimes, but time is more valuable than money sometimes for me. Like,
it is, because you need time to make money.
You need time to just do everything. I mean, especially now, like, we just had to pause the podcast because Wiggles's feeding schedule just went off. And it's just like, if only I had more time. And I know there's this sort of tendency sometimes to say, sometimes when I'm not getting things done, people used to be like, or I probably said this too, is like, Beyonce has the same amount of time in a day that you do. Like, Beyonce has the same 24 hours that you do. Like, make it happen. And it's like, that's just not true. Like, Beyonce has a team of people to hire and get this back. And, you know, we are big Beyonce fans around here. But if only I had more time, like, if somebody asked me, like, would you want more time in a day or would you want more money? I would choose the time, because it's just so important, especially now that she's so little. But anyway, I'm rambling. You want to talk about maybe one more story, because we do have to feed her.
Yeah, well, what you said, this idea that people will say, oh, you know, Beyonce has the same 24 hours. That's completely false. And literally, there's a whole, like, short exposition about that very topic in Time Box. It's, like, the best story. I would say getting the book and reading that story is worth it. The next story, Save Changes, is also really good. Mm-hmm. Again, it starts with this idea of this family, Diana Mello, who has been this powerhouse rebel against the New Dawn, but then she's had her complete memory erased, and so now her two daughters, Amber and Larry, have to care for her. And it sort of builds from there. And it turns out that their father, Pablo, has this special, like, time machine called a Larimar that takes you back to an undisclosed time. And sort of they, Amber and Larry, have to decide, like, when they use this special machine to go back in time to, like, fight back the New Dawn. And then there's a party, and there are, like, side characters, but I knew who they were. Like, yes. There was a side character named Mohammed, who is actually someone who fixes things. And I could understand, like, these quick characters. So this story was pretty fantastic.
Yeah. Like, quick. Meet somebody at a party. They give you some drugs, a.k.a. never mind. Let's move on. Like, not just, like, tons of characters.
The other thing this story pointed out was, like, hyper-surveillance. And I was talking to someone recently, and they were like, pretty soon we're gonna have algorithms that will just predict your day-to-day schedule. And that this story hints at that
yeah,
these, like, robots are like, hey, if you deviate from your typical behavior patterns, it sends a red flag, which I thought was, like, super scary. And we have that technology now. Will be very soon where Google Maps will be able to, like,
suggest your location
or where you'll be in a week, a month from now, based on, like, all the data it's collecting from you, which is who.
And then we get to that point too, because any day you want to sort of veer from the plan, I'm like, wait, we were supposed to do this.
Yeah.
We always go here.
Sometimes you almost make Google Calendar. Like, you're like, if it's not in Google Calendar, it's not happening, which is sort of a very science fictional phrasing. Like 10 years ago, this idea that your calendar would control you because you're
it's not that. It's just like, I want to make a commitment to this thing. And I look at my Google Calendar as like, I'm committing to this versus, or I want to make time in my schedule for this. Because time is currency, right? So it's like, I want to spend on this. So I'm marking this down because this is very important to me. So there's a level of that. Whereas, you know, if you're just like, hey, why don't we just maybe go on a walk today? I'm like, are we going or not? Because I want to sort of map out my day. But if you said like, Amber, we are going for a walk at 5 o'clock. I'm going to Google Calendar you this. This is an important chunk of time I want to carve out for you. I would get my ass up.
Do you think that people's relationship with calendars is like more exact now that it's all digital instead of like a handwritten calendar, like an organizer?
What? Ask the question again.
Like, do you think people are more likely to hold on to their Google Calendar than they would with their planner?
As far as like level of importance?
Yeah, level of, or just like deviation.
No, but I think there is a level of, like, a Google Calendar is a living, breathing thing. Like, it's when the event is coming close, it's going to ping up and remind you. Maybe 2 weeks from now, it'll say, like, hey, you haven't picked up the compost lately. Like, this was in it last month. Like, it's not on this month. It reminds you when anniversaries, when weddings. Whereas, like, if I lost my planner in the shuffle of our house, it wouldn't say, like, hey, you got this coming.
Also, planners had smaller things to write. And I remember having planners that only were like Monday through Friday.
Yes.
Remember that? But now it's like Saturday and Sunday. You can plan those days. And it's from 12 a.m. to 12 a.m. The last story is interesting. It sort of deals with, you can walk through it was fun. Like, you could walk through this arc thing and you could see the potential future of like a utopia. But whenever you have utopia, like, I'm more interested on like how you got there instead of, I'm more interested on how you got there in the utopia. So this isn't really look at questions of utopia. It's sort of just like, here's the world and it's perfect and you need an artist and an engineer to do it. I don't know.
It's like, okay.
Yeah.
I want to retract my other statement. I think Janelle Monáe should keep writing, but I definitely think that it's difficult for me because I don't know how invested I would have been in this if Dirty Computer wasn't made. I'm very grateful for the visuals I had with that album as I was reading this book side by side, but I don't know. It just didn't land for me. And that doesn't mean she's not talented, and that doesn't mean she shouldn't keep writing. But I think there was a lot of buzz around this book as far as like social media and announcements and advertising and photo shoots that it just kind of came down to no substance in some areas.
There was in Nevermind, the story Nevermind, mm-hmm. where fashion sort of becomes a big part of like rebelling, but they didn't really bring that up again.
Ooh.
And yeah.
Can I say one more thing before we close out? Another thing that was really bummed me out was, so obviously I love reading with the audiobook. We're super busy right now. Everybody should read audiobooks. It's also reading. Janelle Monáe read some of the stories from the audiobook, which, as a voice actor, you just know the difference between sometimes when the author is reading something versus like a classically trained, you know, voice.
You're not classically trained, but just a trained
voice.
Someone who's practiced.
Sorry, I'm not classically. Damn.
Well, what is classically trained voice over?
It just sounded good. My God. This bitch is in distress. You could just tell. Janelle Monáe reading it was so, It was just very monotone. It was dull. None of the characters had different voices. Like, that's like the number one rule of doing voices. Like, literally make one character, you know, your aunt, and one character your ex, and go back and forth between those two voices. And each character in those Memory Library stories had, like, at one point I just stopped doing the audiobook. I was like, I'm gonna read this myself.
which is saying something
for me. But then in some of the other stories that I really enjoyed, it was because voiceover actors read those, so they have no attachment. They don't know these characters, so they're like, oh, here's where I heighten, here's where the big moment happens, here's where the lull of the story is. And so they made that work. So some authors reading their books work. Like, I hear Mariah Carey does a really good job with her book. Any book that Toni Morrison has written and then she reads it, she does a great job with voices. But sometimes it's when it's just the author and they're not trained, it's like, no, you can't just read it how you wrote it. Like, give me
or
those
coached,
characters.
Maybe not coached.
Coached, whatever. So, along with the actual written book, the audio book doesn't save you either. I just wanted to make a note of that. And with that being said, Ben, I got to feed my baby. So why don't we warp up the show?
All right. In conclusion, The Memory Librarian has two great stories, Time Box and Save Changes. You should go read the authors who co-authored in this book. Everything they write is really good.
And that's it. We will definitely be giving away this book to a patron. And we'll make a little note of the book that says good luck. Anyway, thank you so much for listening to the Sci-Fi Side Podcast. Up next, we will be discussing the 2019 film Little, directed by Tina Gordon, starring Issa Rae and Marseille Martin. So we will see y'all next week. Go watch Little. We love y'all. We're gonna go feed our little one. Bye y'all.
Bye.